what to do. You gotta work, 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 baby, work, 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 baby, work, 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 baby, that's what you gotta do. In the morning, work, 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 baby, work, 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 baby, work, 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 baby, that's what you gotta do. In the evening, work, 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 baby.
Welcome to another edition of Raising Sand Radio. I'm your host, Susan Gallimore, with Lewis Jordan, Work, Baby, Work, to start off our hour on Labor Day 2009. And what a day it is this year. Workers, that is, most of us, are in pretty bad shape. Unemployment is at a record high, yet we keep hearing from the media about the recovery. How can there be a recovery when folks all over the country are still being laid off and we're watching a grisly charade of what ought to be a healthy debate about the health debacle in this country? We have a president who was once so promising, looking more and more like the front man for the oligarchy, the corporations, and Wall Street. Yet the right continues to label him the worst of the worst, that is, a socialist. Let's take the curious case of Van Jones, a globally recognized award-winning pioneer in human rights and the clean energy economy. He's a 1993 graduate of the Yale Law School and an attorney, and author of the definitive book so far on green jobs called The Green Collar Economy. As a tireless advocate for disadvantaged people and the environment, Van Jones helped to pass America's first green job training legislation, the Green Jobs Act, which George W. Bush signed into law as part of the 2007 energy bill. Van Jones is co-founder of a number of successful nonprofit organizations, including the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights and Green for All, the recipient of many awards and honors, including the Reebok International Human Rights Award, the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leader designation, the prestigious International Ashoka Fellowship, and many more. Van was included in the Ebony Magazine Power 150 list of the most influential African Americans for 2009. In 2008, Essence Magazine named him one of the 25 most inspiring influential African Americans, and Time Magazine named him an environmental hero in 2008. In 2009, Time named him one of the 100 most influential people in the world. Van Jones also had the courage to sign a petition asking for more investigation into the events of and following 9/11. Then the right wing came down hard on him and he recanted his signing the petition. He says he didn't read the petition first. Following that, the White House leaves him hanging in the wind and Van Jones presents his resignation all this last week. Too bad Van Jones did not simply refuse to recant. No matter what anyone's political stance on 9/11 is, we all need to know more about why the whys, whats, and hows of that day. Instead, we ended up with pablum from the Commission of Inquiry that was conducted. Van Jones had an excellent moment to blow this topic wide open, and he blew it. Now he's agreed to step back from his role as Special Advisor for Green Jobs at the White House Council for Environmental Quality. When are the real leaders in this country going to get a grip and stand up for all of us? I vote for Bill Moyers as one of our most cherished fearless leaders. Here's what he said to President Obama this week. I'll put a link on the website to this his entire piece, but listen to this piece.
Check it out, Mr. President. This healthcare thing is make or break for your leadership. But for us, it's life and death. No more Mr. Nice Guy, Mr. President. We need a fighter.
Today, in honor of brave and ethical workers and the creativity inherent in work and music, I'll share music and revolutionary poetry from San Francisco's Jack Hirschman. Last week, I sat in Jack's office above North Beach's Trieste, Café Trieste, and he recorded the poetry we'll hear here today. To get us into the mood, let's listen to Ford Lee, Hardworking Woman.
Hold up your head, girl, and show them who's the queen. You gotta stand proud, stand up and be seen. You're a hard-working woman who needs a hard-loving man. You're doing your best, girl, the best that you can. You put in your day now at your 9-to-5. So throw up your hands, woman, and show the world you're alive. Don't think what's waiting when you walk through your door. The world's your oyster. You deserve much more. So hold up your head, girl, and show them who's queen. You gotta stand proud, stand up and be seen. You're a hard-working woman. Hard-working woman. Hard-working woman. Hard-working woman. You're a hard-working woman. You're a hard-working woman. Hard-working woman. You're a hard-working woman.
This poem is a memorial poem to a wonderful woman, Carol Tarlin. She was a poet. She'd been a friend of mine for many years, but she also became a friend of my wife, Agneta Falk. And when Carol died, she had diabetes, and she died of a heart attack. But she was a person, she wrote a great poem on the Triangle Fire, the famous Triangle Fire in New York, one of the most beautiful lyrics. And she was a unionist, and I thought it would be fitting on this day to read a poem to her. Carol Tarlin, 1943-2004. Not only that at 60 you were still too young to die, not only that, though a stunner in your 20s, you walked hunched from years slaving over as a secretary, bespectacled, no longer comely, as another poet put it, maternal, even a bit dowdy, looking with a half-jaunty, half-slow step along the sidewalk after work to meet Aggie at O'Reilly's for your favorite martini, a couple of sisters in the sunlight that always seem to find that stretch of Green Street. Not that you weren't a wild spender on techno things, a new computer and printer every year or so, one having to step over wires at meetings in your little studio pad on Grant Avenue. But that you, Carol Tarlin, who came from and ferociously adhered to working class consciousness, measuring everything said and done in relation to the slaving and exploited masses in their dream of liberation, you, who living ironically marginalized among North Beach's beat bohemians, anarchoids, narcolepts, and sundry sundered egos of the great god Skits, wrote some of the most centrally engaged, embodied, and revolutionary poems of this generation, and whose trust in the mystery of future is why there is no death of you. This isn't a eulogy, but a celebration of another great nourisher, Chodeshaw, of the international, which will be the human race, which is always beginning. This is a short poem that I wrote about this very place where we're recording. It's called the Columbus Hotel, but it used to be called the Tevere Hotel for the Tevere River in Italy. And I wrote this poem. It's for Terry Garvin. She was a panhandler on the street. Human interlude. She was standing against the wall near the Tevere Hotel, holding a plastic cup as it began to rain. I dug for a coin, walked up to her, and dropped it in. It fell to the bottom of an orange drink. I blushed, looked into her ravaged eyes and skin and hair prematurely graying, and said I was sorry. I thought you needed some bread. I do, she said and smiled. I was just having a little drink. And we stood there laughing together as we watched the raindrops fall on the orange lake above the drowning money. All right, let's get to one that, this one will say a little something. This is called On Greatness. I wrote this in 1992, but in a funny way, before this poem is over, you'll see how it has a relation even very much to this day. On Greatness. The tall sequoia is a monumental cane. The great sequoia once walked with lame across meadows painted with Cherokee syllables. Chains are named and names are changed, but who can rub out proletariat? Cut into all the trees of the loving world. Even Chief Seattle, who is a fish, comes to the surface of the River Rouge and turns into a fighting fist. 100 twists of the old brainwash, 1,000 rings rung wrong. The fact remains that Detroit has a lot to do with Albania. Albania, likewise, with Detroit.
The next two poems read by Jack Hirschman in Italian are available by sending me an email at susan@raisingsanradio. In a few moments, Jack will share a poem called Act, and I'll have a Spanish reading version of that too. In the interest of time, I elected to make those available outside of airtime, but you can get them from me by emailing me at susan@raisingsanradio. This is Raising Sand Radio's Labor Day show on Stanford University's KZSU FM 90.1, and we're celebrating human work and creativity with San Francisco poet Jack Hirschman and music by various blues artists.
This is by Ferruccio Brugnaro, a great Italian poet. I'm just finished translating a new book. It's called The Days Will Come. And the title is related to all of us, because what he means by that is our days will come. And they will come, indeed. When you speak one day of a worker, you'll have to say, he was a man different from others, distinctly different. The man didn't want to be like him, but he was a man, a real man, a mix of mountains and mornings, who approached you and opened up to you expressively tender. The man considered him a slave, hugged him like you hug a horse. But he was a man, really free. A guy who had a sincere human nature. A man grown up in sorrow, who fought tirelessly, day and night, for life and love. Ferruccio worked many years in the petrochemical factory Monte Edison in Marghera, the working class district of Venice, in fact, just over the Long Bridge, if you've been to Venice, that you come out of Venice and you go across the water in a long stretch. Right at the end of that stretch is Marghera. He worked in a chemical factory for 35 years, and he was the first poet in Italy to mimeograph and distribute his poems in the 60s to workers at the factories, and he was he's the one who started that. Another poem I want to read on the fizz that's also, and more specifically, about the workplace. This is after a trial in which all the bosses were acquitted. Of what they were acquitted, you'll hear in just a second. All acquitted in trial over the petrochemical dead. We worked in the midst of deadly poisons, awful cancerous substances. Don't you bastards, you robbers of life, now insist that there was no guarantee, that there was no legislation. Don't say you didn't know. You've murdered and still murder, calmly, coolly. Only the fact doesn't exist. My dead comrades never existed. They've disappeared into nothingness. My comrades, dead workers, can't stand this shame. We won't tolerate this insult. No boss, no court ever could fence us in with such a huge, abominable silence. This is a poem I wrote. It was a lockout in 1996, 1997. Of Liverpool dockers, and a union broke in sympathy with another union that were on strike. And so they were locked out because those Taft-Hartley laws are also in other countries. This happened to be in England, you know, where a sympathy strike is illegal. That's how the people are. That's how the people are suppressed. Indeed, these days, my own feeling personally is that there ought to be unions created for the techno world that we're... you want to get a real revolution going, get the people unionized that way. And in terms of computers, the information world, and overthrow that Taft-Hartley thing that's terrible. It's a terrible thing for the people in the world, a law like that. Anyway, I wrote one... a poem for the Liverpool dockers. They went out and they formed their own union. It was an outlaw union. We had great response all over the world. I must say, I was talking with Jimmy Nolan. I was in Liverpool. I was going to read at a big rally in St. George's Square in 97, and Jimmy Nolan held up a check. It was for a lot of money that was given by the great union here in San Francisco, which is a marvelous. I mean, the Longshoremen Union is a great union here, and one of the ones that come out of Harry Bridges in that tradition. And they helped, you know, they helped across, but they closed down the coast on days. On certain days, they closed down the coast, and they closed down British, they closed down the British one, and in Sweden they all came to, and they closed that down too. Anyway, this was a poem, one of the poems I wrote on that. Thumbs in the private eyes. I've seen men and women of dignity and grace fallen on their beat down faces on the street that lined the belly of the beast called these United States. In Britain as well, I've seen workers who last year were warm as scones, thrown to the pavement, cold, hard stones, because that's how it is when the boss's knives are honed. Private eyes will blind your eyes. With private eyes, humanity dies, and banks and corporations can put you and your docks on the slavers' auction blocks and cut you off like in castration. So the Liverpool dockers and South Korea's Bravo strikers, young and old together with their thumbs in private eyes, serve as a cry to all to lift our collective foot for a swift kick in the boss's butt as well. And let him know their private eyes are the busted windows of yesterday, 'cause the instrument we play is an organize for mass demands, and watch us rise, transforming the future nonpareil here in Korea and heroic Liverpool.
You know she can't help if I take it on the job.
Song is after the police sweep of prostitutes in the San Francisco Tenderloin. I've seen them come and go, and it's true, the world's complex. But if there's one thing I know, it's that the world's greatest whores belong to the opposite sex. With their wagons, sirens, red lights, their boots, guns, and bullets, too. Oh, they do so well, the capitalist tricks, with their goddamn humongous cruel nightsticks to protect the lords of Christians and Jews. How they love being hookers for the pimpoisie. Always on Sunday, they get to play snooker and never have to put in the cooker Fast Fanny, Garbage Caddy, and Bimmy the Squeeze. But on Mun, Tu, Weds, Thursday, and Fry, they hunt us down like pigs in a sty. So now us tenderloins have got to respond and fight for swimming rights in the brothelized pond. We're workers just like those pooters with blue thighs.
All right, I'm going to read this one.
I really regard this poem, and I've read it many times, as one of the great poems written in this generation. And it could be read on Labor Day, it could be read on May Day, it could be read any day. It should be. This poem is from a book that I translated by a great El Salvadorian poet, Roque Dalton. I've translated it in coordination with the Brigada Cultural de Roque Dalton, which we formed in San Francisco in the 80s. This poem is called Act. In the name of those washing others' clothes and cleaning others' filth and whiteness, in the name of those caring for others' children and selling their labor power in the form of maternal love and humiliations, in the name of those living in another's house, which isn't even a kind belly, but a tomb or a jail, in the name of those living on other's land, the houses and factories and shops, streets, cities and towns, rivers, lakes, volcanoes and mountains always belong to others, and that's why the cops and the guards are there, guarding them against us. In the name of those who have nothing but hunger, exploitation, disease, a thirst for justice and water, persecutions and condemnations, loneliness, abandonment, oppression, and death, I accuse private property of depriving us of everything.
I don't bother work, and work don't bother me. I don't bother work, well, work don't bother me. Some people call me lazy, but I'm happy as a man can be. You get your check on Friday, stop off your drink with Bill. If Bill don't rob you, the craft table will. That's why I don't bother work, and work don't bother me. It'll never be said, work made no cause for me. Work brings the sweat from your brow, knocks the curl from your hair. You leave home smelling like a lily, come in just like a bear. That's why I don't bother work, we just never could agree. It's all right for horses, but it sure wasn't meant for me. You can't have no fun, too tired from working all day. That's a sure sign that work don't agree with you. That's when your girl will cut out and old Bill will cut in on you. You pay your rent and buy groceries, loan a dollar to your friend, chip in a half on some booze, and then you're dead broke again. That's why I don't bother working. Well, work don't bother me. But I'm happy as a man can be.
This is what I wrote for the two words. The two words on the tip of the tongue of the soul, as crisis after crisis happens and cries after cries at the end of the old year, and new change hoping not to be same old. two words on the tongue tip of the heart, but one finds one can't pronounce them, can't announce them with confidence, determination, and the pride of courage. Got a cell phone, but why haven't they called? Got a BlackBerry, but they're not on the menu. Got digital buttons for every kind of question, but the answer to one's being a disaster, like a market crash or an invasion or a bombardment of innocence, eludes one. We got a new president and his epic-making and image-changing his victory with the joy of the people whose forebears were slaves, and therefore the joy as well of the people whose forebears were their masters. For now we all really can be free, but why aren't we? Because we won't say is. Won't utter the is that's international socialism and throw our energies into the creation of it, into making it the irresistible power that will end the woes and the wails of the war-torn and the moaning of the women and children of this world. So what I wish for you is the is of 2009, where those two words, first whispers on the lips, then a river sounding the poem that's the song embracing you with the meaning of the future with your brothers and sisters all over this world, and is, you is, and is we be, all each other's baby. This is a response to Amiri Baraka. Amiri's a comrade and an old friend, and we read together in Italy a couple of years ago. And naturally, he was very, very much after the whole Bush thing and for Obama. I had a sort of different view, as Obama still represents the capitalist party to me. You know. But I wrote this Arcane, one of my longer poems. It's in different parts. It's called The Urinal Stalls Arcane. 1. Let me drip this, Amiri, and shake it before I zip up. The way I understand it, you want to do the revolution seizure of power thing. And so unite like a cozy czar with a liberal millionaire class operative, and because he's black, or half black, or is it 3/5%, blindly stick the tail of the ass on your own. Refuse to see him as another burlesque coglioni and a class enemy. He's a poet like yourself, and so your vanity, re-prophecy fulfilled a generation ago, before his parents even named him Baraka, is crowned. I mean, even the moon of Alabama knows Obama's come from a linguistic mutation as the counter to Osama, and also with Hussein at his name, stopping up the guilt that people feel for having believed a pack of thugs who'd forced them into war. In fact, your progressive agenda, the newer New Deal you project onto Obama, is closer to what McKinney or Nader are about. Seems that really, in a twist of Timony Black Martunis, you've surrendered to the class enemy you insist, while calling left anarchist or Trotskyite tendencies infantile, is the fourth black revolution, and put your hope in some corrupt new dope, when surely you know Barack's winning the election will lead to the same no diff. They won party, and will lead all of us into another war. So choosing the lesser of two evils, that yawningly, cowardly, choiceless choice we're given to exercise every 4 years, you want us to slosh in the same old trough, this time with a new cocker crowing on the heap of its filthy lies, and the pimpable figment Obama's post-racist double talk, which righteously you decry, for the all-class, all-race whore of an idea it is, you're nonetheless going to bed with for cop power tale-ism. And it'll indeed be the figment on Pawn Street, the new old Broadway, in brazen sunlight. The Poussey twins are already collapsing in a fellatio 105 hystericals high. The real truth isn't pretty. The real truth, in fact, is they've wrapped it up behind your back. Of course, said there's no turning back. It's Springfield, sleek Lincoln, emerging from the splashy Kennedy King Kennedy car wash. Since it's more and more known we're all part black and come from Africa, they say, come all the way from Texas looking for a power play. Forward to where we have to go. Buy the fig, unite with the hoe, grow little shitlers like that bush leaguer in Iran, apt reflection of the dead bush in this land. Listen to the Wall Street wail, the globaloney fall, and by any means necessary, stimulate the crooks, help them out of the hell they've made for all. Two. But Jack, didn't your eyes moisten? Didn't you moan and groan no more when he appeared in your San Francisco flat in video flesh and spoke his victory to you and all your young friends gathered there from Italy, France, Denmark, Sweden, too? Weren't your Rilke-like inconspicuous tears identity's kiss and vindication of scores of years of civil righteousness with black brothers and sisters against slavery, segregation, the poll tax, Jim Crow? And didn't they affirm the meaning of the last great human movement in these now so disunited states? And 3 days after the election, didn't it happen on Battery Street downtown, in that well-dressed professional workers' district, on the face of that African-American woman passing? Wasn't there, for the first time in your 36 years walking San Francisco, a smile, no, a deeply joyous beam of, in a moment when sister was freed to express a shared recognition of struggle and common humanity? And didn't you tell yourself after, that was the change, the birth of a depth that seeds the idea liberty should belong to all and now, hopefully, can be the hallelujah blossom. 3. Save the 24 Afghani orphan kids found living in underground sewers in Rome. Cuts the blossom in the bud. Save families on the streets weeping all the way to the bunks in shelters. Spits on the blossom in the bud. Save the boarded up downtown mills, factories, and empty stations, wounds the blossom in the bud. Save the suicides that have become weapons of mass destruction, bloodies the blossom in the bud. Save the dream spelled nightmare in the undocumented tomorrow, and the laid off workers shooting up families, veins, post offices, and schools. Dooms the blossom in the bud. 4. Money, Jack, money, Jack, money. Its end, all kiss its hide and tweak. We hated life, that was the key. We hated living because we were forced. Needed that voice without which there was hopeless, that power short of which all was same old nothing. And he so up to it. It's the thirst of youth what's doing it, more than even blackness or the slave curse, which are stirring parts of it, like those young fighting bodies murdered all across the 60s and a generation after. And so can't you see, Jack, it's about time a superb young African American to be the President of the United States of America, just because he's young and black for a change, and leave the left at the river. After all, the destruction everywhere by that criminal hunter, the Vomit Gang. Even its candidacy was epic-making, with a feeling that comes with the end of one cartoon, the beginning of another. The world lifted off the back of a sob, a presence of freshness and spring recycling, but this time as redemptions for the assassinations, the throwing of bombs in a macho monstrosity of evil spreading like cancer of soul. As if a mouth could belong to common sense again, instead of to the warmongers and their oligarchy, branding with the rabid fangs of prophets, the willing necks of Congress, disciples of greed, hustlers who had surrendered their vision to the sun and moon of death. But the new Congress keeps on drinking death for breakfast, spitting on people's needs with arrogance and hate, bailing out banks, thieves of robed gold amid the collapse of money's value. Stimulating what? Recovering what? Obama just gave $88 billion to kill more women and children. If that's not enough, Comrade Amiri, if a molecule of the thought's not begun dawning in you, let me help it along. It's a con, the old con of power, seductively eloquent, transparent, engaging, even inspiring, but the cunningest con ever hoaxed by one party with both hands in all our pockets. There'll be no progressive agenda, etc., nor will Obama a shaman be, helping a limping cartoon stand upright in wonder with the depth charge of sun-bursting dignity. We've already taken that ride, had that lift. Many were the words, some the deeds, few the achievements, and the invasions aren't over. I got no job, and I don't know any robot hiring. Why is a face in my mirror Joseph Fritzl's? I thought restrictions on Cuba were being lifted. Why was the great Silvio Rodriguez denied a visa? Only the computers can save us, and just might. They're the major apparatus of the International Communist Party of now and the future. And the bills we pay for them are the dues we pay to it for membership in the freest medium on earth. It's the space time's been waiting for, the process that we've been working 20 years within, the call and response from literally the other side of the world, instantaneously reminding, wars doom all hope to failure. Wars such as those we've been executing have set in motion out of desperate fear on a bed of lies, the fascism of it all, and Obama simply the latest chosen to make it digestible to the liberals and the left. The wine of the cartoons turned toxic rancid. The tune of the cartoon, a cartoon of a dildo in the form of the new world president between lesbians in cash, while the governments guzzle the people's blood, and bees, the yellow cabs, and the red and black and white ones too, are swarming streets and freeways, honking, because become the cartoon's face. Fleek is the tongue out, its body weakened by, and by drink as well as ignorance and indifference, with talking jukes of the latest joke off a toke at every corner. And yes, more and more of us thinking suicide big time, and yet more and more of us realizing so far as those corporation Nazis crippling the backs of the knees of any leap forward, he didn't off enough of them before Berlin finally gave up. That is my arcade. Yes.
And with that, Jack Hirschman sharing his latest arcane for the first time, I wish you all a happy Labor Day. And I quote another radio host, if you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own. Here at Raising Sand Radio, we urge listeners to understand the big picture and we take the time to bring in-depth views to help you do that. We, the people, need your ideas, your energy, and your passion to create a way of life that offers the vast majority on the planet an opportunity to add their voices and their work to create ways of living that balance living and working with playing and creativity, more music, more poetry, more art, more views into the human spirit. Thanks to Jack Hirschman for sharing his work and passion, and to Jimmy Reed with Big Boss Man, Hard Work from Please Mr. Foreman by Joe L. from the Ann Arbor Blues Festival, Walter Brown with Work Don't Bother Me. Thanks also to the Birdster of Paradise for the selection of blues played here today. That show, Blues with a Feeling with the Bird of Paradise, airs every Saturday from 9 to noon on KZSU FM 90.1. We'll go out with another one from the Birdster with Nat Adderley's Radio Nights featuring Cannonball Adderley, Charles Lloyd, Joe Salvano, Sam Jones, and Lewis Hayes on drums.
Mm-hmm.